Welcome. Thanks for joining us on another edition of Hoosier Ag This Week. I'm farm broadcaster Eric Pfeiffer from Hoosier Ag Today, ready to run down the top news and information from this past week in Indiana and U.S. agriculture. Joining me will be my colleagues Andy Eubank with the markets, meteorologist Ryan Martin with his Indiana farm forecast, and C.J. Miller and Sabrina Halverson help me bring you the news, including how USDA is looking to tackle this issue of bird flu in cattle, how Indiana ag leaders are looking to grow export markets for our poultry producers, how Agrinovis Indiana is looking to build on our already sterling reputation as the ag bioscience capital of the world, and how Farm Bureau President Zippy Duval is hoping to finally tackle the farm labor issue when President Trump takes office. Let's begin out in D.C., where beef is under attack again. It seems like beef is always under attack. This time, it's by the Dietary Guidelines for Americans and their quote-unquote scientific report that was published on Tuesday. The report recommends less red meat consumption.
The dietary guidelines ideally are supposed to be pretty objective and guided by sound science, and that's what the first half of the process is designed to do.
That's Sigrid Johannes, Director of Government Affairs for the National Cattlemen's Beef Association. She joined us on the latest Indiana Ag Policy podcast from Hoosier Ag Today to discuss the dietary guidelines that ultimately impact school lunch and other federal food programs and are sent out to medical professionals for recommendations on Americans' diets.
This time, I would say the scientific report has landed on some pretty misguided conclusions, some pretty baseless conclusions. They're not really following the science that we've watched them examine for nearly 2 years now. And so as we shift this month in December into the next phase of this process, which kind of takes this from the scientific to the political over at USDA and HHS, we really want to make sure that some of the least valid conclusions that made it into that report don't make it into the final copy of the actual Dietary Guidelines for Americans.
This process of updating the guidelines happens every 5 years, which in theory spans different presidential administrations and Congresses, so politics shouldn't play a big part in the scientific aspect of this. However, Johannes says it would be naive to think politics aren't part of it.
I don't think it's that much of a stretch to look at all of the other actions USDA under President Biden have been taking for the last 4 years and this single-minded focus on climate. You know, I think there's a lot of the decisions in this nutrition report, this nutrition guidelines, that are not being made based on nutritional issues or nutritional facts at all. They're looking at environmental issues. They're looking at an agenda that's sort of right out of the box without even really looking at the facts on the ground decided that beef's bad for the environment. And how can we try and cut that back?
Now that the advisory committee has completed its report, it will now be sent to USDA and the Department of Health and Human Sciences, where the agencies will evaluate the committee's recommendations and translate that information into the final guidelines. Johannes says the call to action for cattlemen and women, as well as meat lovers like me, is to put pressure on those agency folks, as well as your members of Congress, to make sure they do follow the science. You can hear more from Johannes in the Indiana Ag Policy Podcast, wherever you listen to podcasts, and in the Hoosier Ag Today mobile app. As you well know, farm labor has been an ongoing issue for the ag industry. Our C.J. Miller recently spoke with one of the nation's top ag leaders, who says he'll be pushing lawmakers in D.C. here in 2025 to fix it.
We're excited about the opportunity to work with this administration to find a solution to that problem.
And that's Zippy Duval, president of American Farm Bureau. He says he'll be reaching out to Trump and congressional lawmakers to revise the H-2A visa program.
We know that this president-elect is concerned about having people that can work not just on farms but small businesses across America and how important that is. Coupled with his deportation policy, coupled with securing the border, all those things that, you know, we are out there going to be monitoring and help him understand how it is affecting agriculture so that we don't do any damage to our food security system here in our country, because that's what keeps us free, because we can be able to feed ourselves.
Duval says he has solutions for lawmakers.
We need a workable program that has a wage rate that's set that our farmers can afford to maintain the jobs, but also treat the men and women that have given their lives to work on our farms, treat them well, and to kind of lower the regulation part of it, because DOL has went crazy with regulations around our farm labor programs. And we need year-round workers because there's a lot of agriculture that works day in and day out all year long. And we need to lower those regulations so it be more workable and sustainable for our farmers.
Most of all, Duvall says he's encouraged that the gridlock over farm labor reform may soon come to an end.
Their excuse over the years has been, we're not going to do anything until we secure the border. This president says he's going to secure the border. That takes that excuse away, so that makes me excited that there might be a great opportunity to fix this problem.
Read more at HoosierAgToday.com. I'm CJ Miller.
Thank you, CJ. We've got much more in the way of farm news coming up later on here on Hoosier Ag This Week. Chief Meteorologist Ryan Martin has his Indiana farm forecast coming up in just a few moments. Right now, let's switch our attention over to the markets and welcome in Andy Eubank. Andy, it's been a back-and-forth week for the markets, and on Friday, more back than forth.
Does that mean lower markets? Because that's what we had, indeed, a sell-off throughout the session. We'll have those settlements coming up. We'll begin, though, with market analysis to find out what happened during the week. And for that, I spoke with Brian Basting of Advanced Trading during Friday's session. Brian, a Friday sell-off as we go into the weekend. It was a full week of trade, and we had some choppy trade throughout the week. It looks like we're ending, though, on a bit of short covering in the markets. What have you seen this week?
Well, thanks for having me, Andy. I think what we're seeing here as we enter mid-December is it's turning to a weather market now in South America. We've got the USDA supply-demand report behind us here in December. I think the critical factor now, Andy, is the good weather that we're seeing forecast for Brazilian soybeans over the next 2 weeks. The vast majority of Brazilian beans are forecast to see normal or above normal precip here through the last 2 weeks of December. And not all the beans by any means are setting pods and filling pods, but up in the northern area in Mato Grosso, for example, the largest soybean producing state, a lot of those beans will be setting pods and filling pods. And as your listeners know, when we get into August, it's do or die time for beans. And right now that the weather trends are favorable in the north, but not so much in terms of maturity wise in the south. We're looking at January still being the critical month there, Andy, but that's pressuring the market, that potential for a good finish to the growing season in the north in Brazil, and really looking at non-bullish news. Other than we are seeing some export sales announcements from USDA come out this week to unknown destinations. Other than that, though, the pressure of that looming record harvest in Brazil is weighing on the soybean market.
Over in the corn market, a nice boost on Tuesday from USDA's World Supply and Demand Outlook numbers. And corn made its way close to 450. I don't think we quite got there, but we're not any longer in that neighborhood. How important would it be to get back to that area?
We did have a supportive USDA report on corn, Andy. We saw the USDA increase their export forecast substantially from what it was there in November, and they also increased the ethanol forecast. And when the dust had settled for the report, they reduced ending stocks 200 million bushels from what they were in November. And we saw the March contract briefly pierce through 450, as you said. The high from the October was 452 and a quarter. I believe March made it up to 451, 451 and a quarter this week, and did not make it through this time and has backed off since then. Moving forward, we'll see if that sell-off from that higher level encourages some end users to get in here and take advantage of this break.
Economist Brian Basting from Advanced Trading, and we appreciate Brian's thoughts. The number there is 309-664-2314. Friday numbers down a little over a penny in the corn market. March ends at 442, a penny and a half lower. May 449 and a quarter, losing 1 3/4. 2 cents down for July at 453. January soybeans 988 and a quarter, down 7.5 cents. March contract 995, losing 8 1/4 and off 8 on the May, 1005 1/2. And March wheat 552 and a quarter, that was 6 1/4 lower. The meats higher. February live cattle 192.02, up 117. February lean hogs 85.60, up $1.12. I'm Andy Eubank with the Friday market review. Plenty more still to come on the weekend show. This is Hoosier Ag This Week.
We have what you want, when you want it, where you want it. At Hoosier Ag Today, we have up-to-the-minute markets, weather, and farm news ready for you 24/7. You can find it on your local radio station, the Hoosier Ag Today website, and the Hoosier Ag Today mobile app, as well as your favorite social media channel. All because we want to give you what you want, when you want it, where you want it. Hoosier Ag Today. Tune in or log on.
Some warmer weather coming for the weekend, but also a little bit of moisture. I'm Chief Meteorologist Ryan Martin with Hoosier Ag Today's Weekend Weather Outlook. Your Saturday is going to be mostly dry, for sure. We're not looking at any major weather issues here, but I think we're going to be looking at clouds increasing through your Saturday. Starting it off quite nice with sunshine and nice south winds, but the clouds increase late afternoon, and as we move through the overnight tonight, scattered rain showers moving through the Hoosier State. I'm going to pencil in anywhere from a tenth to three quarters of an inch. I think it's going to take some stronger showers or thunderstorms to get to the upper end of the range. Most of us are going to be half an inch or less, but I won't rule out some slightly heavier activity out there, especially farther east and south. Then we take a little bit of a break for Sunday afternoon, Sunday evening, dealing with a secondary round of moisture through Monday, then another quarter to 1 inch potentially across the state. The high end of the range that time down in central and southern Indiana, I-70 southward. It's going to be very hit and miss farther north, probably 75-80% coverage out of that wave. So from Saturday night through Monday night, we're looking at decent moisture chances over most of the state. That takes us to Tuesday, and we are not seeing additional precipitation. We are slightly cooler, but not cold by any stretch. Wednesday, we see another little wave trying to come through. The bulk of it wants to be down south, Tennessee Valley, deep south, even into the southern Ohio River Valley. So not as much moisture for Indiana, but maybe a spit sprinkle or wet snowflake or two. We mentioned the latter because cold air is coming in. Overnight, Wednesday night through Thursday, we get a lot colder here, with temperatures pushing back down to near normal and slightly below normal levels. I think that holds then through a large part of the rest of the week. I do think that Friday stays cool, and then we see a reinforcing shot of colder air coming for the weekend, the 21st and the 22nd. It's not going to be as cold as what we just got done dealing with this past week, but it will be chilly. And it's enough to probably trigger some lake effect precipitation, particularly Saturday afternoon, Saturday night, and early Sunday. Cold air lingers through Monday and Tuesday the following week. Those are the days preceding Christmas. Christmas Eve at Tuesday could see a few wet snowflakes trying to come together in the eastern Corn Belt. Not exceptionally well organized, but moisture around. And then on Christmas Day, I think we're mostly dry, but we are going to be chilly. We just don't get into the significant moderating of temperatures that they're seeing farther west. I am looking at a major upper-level ridge that's going to be trying to build into the Great Plains and western United States. Eventually, that ridge moves our direction, but I think it's going to take a little bit to actually get in here, so temperature moderation may be late in the week of Christmas. I'm looking more toward late the 26th into the 27th, and as that moderation comes, I'll be seeing some rain coming back as well. I'm Ryan Martin.
Well, we've survived another year, another growing season, another election cycle, and plenty of market volatility. All of us at Hoosier Ag Today are proud that we've been able to keep you informed of the latest farm news, markets, and weather developments in 2024, and honored that once again you have made us the most listened to farm network in the state. On air and online, and ready for 2025, we are Hoosier Ag Today.
If you were looking for the latest news in Indiana and U.S. agriculture, well, you landed in the right spot on your radio dial or podcast or wherever it is you happen to be listening. We thank you for finding us. This is Hoosier Ag This Week from Hoosier Ag Today. I'm Eric Pfeiffer. As of last Friday, USDA is requiring the raw milk samples nationwide be collected and shared with them for testing of the H5N1 bird flu virus in dairy cattle. Even though no dairy herds in Indiana have been affected, Sabrina Halverson explains why testing measures all across the U.S.
are now being required.
This is a virus that's difficult to get under control. It's difficult to understand.
Dr. Meg Schaefer, an epidemiologist and national public health advisor for the SAS Institute, emphasized the significance of this measure.
The outbreak is so widespread in our dairy cattle right now that we have got to be aggressive in trying to stop it.
The new guidelines mandate that raw milk will be tested even before pasteurization and that the results will be shared with USDA. This increased information sharing also extends to data on domestic poultry flocks, helping to provide a more comprehensive picture of H5N1's impact. While pasteurization remains a safe way to neutralize harmful pathogens, Dr. Schaefer warned against consuming raw milk during the outbreak.
The risk is far too high to expose your children to expose any person, especially someone who might be immune compromised or pregnant women. That's a really significant risk.
For dairy farmers, the USDA's directive serves as a call to action to collaborate in controlling the outbreak.
USDA released new testing guidelines requiring the testing of raw milk, even raw milk that's sitting pre-pasteurization, and requiring the sharing of more information for contact tracing and epidemiologic analysis. Those actions are really critical to dampen this down, to stop livestock loss, to stop the spread of illness, to stop agricultural workers from getting sick. You know, at the end of the day, I would think as a producer, you would not want to be the farm that starts or originates the virus that ends up becoming a pandemic. And that possibility is real.
Read more at HoosierAgToday.com. I'm Sabrina Halverson.
All right, Sabrina, thanks. Indiana is the unofficial capital of the world for ag bioscience. And that's in large part because of Agrinovis Indiana and the industry that they've been able to build here by helping bring ag bioscience companies in to Indiana and also the ones they've helped build in Indiana. Well, $25,000 was up for grabs last week as part of the producer-led innovation challenge from Agrinovis, and that is to help build ag bioscience companies, again, here from Indiana. Jeff Zents, Senior Director of Innovation for Agrinovis, explains what the Producer-Led Innovation Challenge is all about.
We started this program in partnership with the Indiana Corn Marketing Council and Indiana Soybean Alliance 5 years ago, and it's really to tackle on-farm problems. What's going on farm where technology can uniquely impact and help the return to the farmer? And so in the past 4 years, our last four winners, every one of them has gone on post-program to raise capital after or be acquired. One of the greatest stories that we've got is that they go on to success, and we're excited about the fifth potentially doing the same.
Zents says this year's winner of the $25,000 grand prize is Grip, a mobile software startup created by CEO Tracy Wiedmeyer and Chief Product Officer Jenkin Lee.
Two P's, Grip. Tracy and the team, they've built a platform to help farmers with keeping track of things like maintenance records, preventative maintenance timing, helping with what comes down to employee management and labor management. And they are able to use something as simple as a QR code that everybody on the farm has access to. They can keep up to date, on track with everything, help with the labor burden, help with understanding what's going on farm. And eventually that will drive return on value for the farmer because they won't have the disbursement of these resources out with either one employee or multiple employees to keep track of.
Grip is based in Indianapolis, and this year they secured over 50 farmer customers across the country in specialty fruits and vegetables, cover and row crops, dairy, pork, and beef operations, as well as greenhouses. Now, in addition to the big announcement of Grip being this year's winner, Agrinovis also had some other exciting news about next year's Producer-Led Innovation Challenge.
We've heard time and time again from our partners that what if we could do more? What if we could support at a higher level? And so Velocity is that next evolution.
So what is Velocity? Zents tells you about the new accelerator program that will begin in early 2025.
It's going to be a six-month program in which we support innovators in three different verticals that we believe are going to be key for the future of the Indiana ag bioscience economy. Those three are on-farm innovation, food as health innovation, and bio-innovation as a whole. Those three are going to be the areas in which we focus to find problems that exist in the space, support innovators as they tackle those problems. And ultimately, we're fortunate enough to be able to now offer three $25,000 checks at the end of that rainbow to seed three different companies to drive forward into those ideas.
And what does this ultimately mean for Indiana farmers?
This means that Indiana farmers are going to have Indiana innovation, making their lives better, making their checkbooks thicker, making their yields higher, and ultimately making their operation more sustainable, more revenue generating, and ultimately having a better quality of life in the long run.
Companies, individuals, and entrepreneurs who want to participate in Velocity can access more information and a registration link at the Agrinovis website. There's a link on our website, HoosierAgToday.com. The deadline to register is January 12th. Also at HoosierAgToday.com, a link to register for Purdue University's annual Top Farmer Conference, hosted by Purdue's Center for Commercial Agriculture. It'll take place from 8 to 4 p.m. on Friday, January 10th at Purdue's Beck Agricultural Center in West Lafayette. But when you register for the conference, you will have the option to attend in person or join remotely via Zoom. Plenty of speakers, a great event each year. Again, you can register at HoosierAgToday.com. Coming up on Hoosier Ag This Week, why can't we figure out nitrogen rates on corn? And trying to grow export markets for Indiana's poultry. That's next from Hoosier Ag Today.
Ag Bioscience, the number one ag tech podcast globally, is now available on video. Hear the latest from innovators in food, animal health, plant science, ag tech, and agriculture.
Part of our service, all of us, is to connect the dots from the past to the future, respecting our heritage and thinking into the future to make sure that we remain very competitive for job creation and prosperity in our own state here in the Midwest. And I'll say, for example, in agriculture, I've been to almost all of the counties in our state, and every county I would meet up with our extension colleagues and listen to our neighbors and partners. And often they would talk about technology usage, including AI and autonomy, in modernizing and further enhancing the productivity of our farmers.
Get more episodes online at agrinovisindiana.com. Click on podcasts. Also available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Welcome back, and thanks for spending some of your weekend with us here at Hoosier Ag Today. I'm Eric Pfeiffer, and you're listening to Hoosier Ag This Week. If you've ever tuned in to one of our Purdue Crop Chat podcasts, you know we like to give each other a bit of a hard time. I'm joined by Purdue Extension corn specialist Dan Quinn and soybean specialist Sean Castile to discuss agronomy topics important to you, but we have some fun along the way. One of the running jokes is that Castile gives Quinn a hard time that they still haven't figured out nitrogen rates in corn for about 40 years. On the latest episode, available now in the Hoosier Ag Today mobile app, Quinn explains that in his research this year, he did trials around the state with zero N that might explain why it's so tough to figure out. Beginning with the research farm in West Lafayette.
Yields can range from 100 to 200 bushel with no nitrogen. And then you go over to Davis, right, in the Puyallup Blounts, yeah, and it's 20 to 40 bushel. Mm-hmm. And then it's, you know, Southeast Indiana is maybe in between that, 100 to 120 bushel. And then Northeast Indiana is over here. And the overall range in yields at zero N at these locations was from 20 bushel to 210 bushel.
So Quinn says it makes it difficult to answer the question he often gets from farmers.
Do we need one pound of N, yeah, or 1.2? Is it 0.8? And you look at the state and you go, wow, good, yeah, luck figuring that out, right?
So, yeah, I'll get you close.
Yeah, it's so environmentally driven, and, you know, do we have a good handle on even predicting the weather 3 days out? You know, no. So I think that's what makes it really challenging to try and pinpoint where some things work or not, or where some of the rates need to be or not, year in and year out.
For great agronomic insight and a few laughs along the way, find the Purdue Crop Chat now wherever you listen to podcasts. When it comes to poultry, did you know Indiana is among the top producers in the nation? You do now. CJ Miller reports how Indiana's ag leaders are working to find new markets for poultry around the world. to raise its value back here at home.
Well, Eric, Indiana is the number one producer of duck in the U.S., number three for egg production, and number four for turkey production. In fact, the state's two main duck producers, Maple Leaf Farms and Culver Duck, have seen a great deal of success because of the demand for duck in Asia, Canada, and Mexico. Becky Yoniskan, president of the Indiana State Poultry Association, says the worldwide demand for Indiana poultry products are growing because more people around the world have the money to spend.
As the middle class continues to really grow in Asia, in the Middle East, even in the Africas, it's one of the first areas they look where they might spend that extra couple dollars is on protein. And poultry and eggs are very flexible, culturally adaptive sources of protein.
She says another area for export growth is the purchase of Indiana poultry by hotels and restaurants around the world.
They are a very significant market, obviously, you know, larger in bulk and easier to sell to and move more product that way. But it's a fantastic way to introduce new products into a country.
Yoniskan was recently in Washington, D.C. for the winter meeting for the USA Poultry and Egg Export Council, or USAPEC for short, as they discussed how trade policies could impact the poultry and egg industries in 2025 and beyond.
We have lots of great support in the National Turkey Federation, United Egg Producers, National Chicken Council, and other agricultural organizations that are out there making sure people are aware how policies affect folks on the ground in Indiana producing food for the nation.
Read more at HoosierAgToday.com. I'm CJ Miller.
All right, CJ, thanks. Let's finish up today's show with a promise from a lawmaker. And I know what you're thinking. Sometimes those are worth about as much as a $3 bill. But let's give them a chance. There might be some hope for a new farm bill early in 2025. Incoming Senate Majority Leader John Thune vows to kickstart legislative action on farm and other legislation next year as the GOP takes the helm in the new Congress. The South Dakota Republican complains the Senate has done little this Congress, starting with USDA and other spending bills.
11 of the 12 were reported out of the Appropriations Committee last summer, available for floor consideration. We could have had them on the floor, but like everything else, that's languished. Farm bill expired. A lot of farmers and ranchers out there wondering what's going to happen with no farm bill.
Supplemental disaster aid, another mention, was still being discussed as farmers struggle to recover from storms, drought, and low crop prices. Outgoing Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer spent much of the year focused on court nominations and reproductive issues, leaving spending decisions for last in another stopgap continuing resolution.
We're trying to get it, the CR to go as long as possible. I think it'll land somewhere in the middle of March.
Thune has already released an intense schedule with the Senate in session for 10 straight weeks to start the new year, and 5 days a week most of the year.
The one thing I can tell you about next year is that it's going to be different. The American people, I will tell you, the way the Senate operates today is not the way it's going to be operating in the future. We aim to fix that.
In addition to a farm bill and spending bills, the new majority plans to address border, defense, and energy priorities, and important to agriculture, a sweeping tax bill. That does it for this weekend's edition of Hoosier Ag This Week. If you missed any of today's show, find it online, HoosierAgToday.com or in the Hoosier Ag Today mobile app. We'll do it again next weekend, same hat time, same hat channel. I'm Eric Pfeiffer, Hoosier Ag Today, Indiana's Farm Network.